know, my friend Peter Bergman promulgated the first law of radio. It is as follows. The beginning of any radio show is a mystery.
Now, Miss Mysterioso, Mistress of Mystery, played the organ. Everybody remembers her. Well, she was there with some potato salad that was really good, as I recall. And she had on a green and red sequin number that showed the two or three things about her that were no mystery at all. I said I understood him to mean that Miss Mysterioso, the Mistress of Mystery, was a looker. You got that right, son, he smiled. Curves up ahead, or whatever the road sign says, if you subscribe to my meaning.
Well, you know, Tonto, no other organ of the female anatomy can be so easily injured.
Who is that man?
Such injuries may often turn out to be permanent. If you wish to massage your breasts, Sheriff, do it gently and slowly. Avoid vigorous and too frequent use of this practice. Should you wish to massage, do so at night, and for no more than a period of 10 minutes. Always rub around and around and up. Never should you push your breasts down or flatten them. To do so might very easily weaken the muscles supporting them and tend to stretch the tissue.
Oh, hey, wake up, go to sleep. Who cares? It's time for the Triple XM All-Night Morning Show. I'm your host, Dick Joke, and here's my co-host, Jingle Tits.
Hey, Dick, I gotta tell you, I think that the hormones are kicking in. I'm actually beginning to get some titskies now.
Oh,
and I'm gonna
man.
Show them to you right now. Look!
Oh!
Look!
Yeah, look, it's a Mercator projection, hey!
I didn't think the sex operation was gonna take, but.
Hey, listen, look,
we could stop off at Pop's and dig some jugs.
Some what?
Oh, that Louise Wong's got a balcony you could do Shakespeare from.
Why sit there in that box and play thee with that bone, my lord?
Why, cause Marie.
Come, I've a box for thee. 'Tis filled with sweetest meats and buttered buns. I've love-crossed clams and French-style jelly rolls. Let's pick a crypt and spread a checkered cloth and lay us down to eat.
Yeah, well, and what I do now is I do things backwards. If I get a piece of pie, I eat it from the backwards to the front, because you never know when the world's going to end. And when I make love to my wife, we have the orgasm first, and then we do the foreplay.
What sudden appetite inspires thee to spread thy dainties out upon this hallowed ground?
Alas, sir, my lord.
Alas.
And I would your St. Judas be thus to kiss thee off.
By that account, my nunc the count would then St. Peter be, for he hath bid me now 3 times adieu ere Chanticleer arose.
I've a budding rose or two myself, my lord, and Chanticleer as well. That cock will rise no more. Its breast lies broasted in my hamper here, with bangers drowned in beer.
Thy tempting tongue doth get me up, yet ghastly orders from my holy father's ghost oblige me take this food to go.
Had I revealed such flesh to thee as that apparent apparition showed to me, you'd not run off, but eat it here.
Speak'st thou of communion, dear Virgin Maid?
Come, pray, that I might be thy host, and let thee take me upon thy tongue.
I've the blood for it, if you've the wine.
Within my unspoiled chalice, let's transubstantiate.
To hell with that! Let's do it here.
In hallowed ground, my lord.
Fear not. I'll rise like Lazarus, uncorrupted, clean.
And I shall rise corrupted, but a queen.
Marie.
Oh, chastity, thy rule is now o'erthrown, and gentle hymen split. I must play the goat now, Edmund's monkeying with her back to back. My virgin queen.
Majesty's a pretty nice girl, but she doesn't have a lot to say. Her Majesty's a pretty nice girl, but she changes from day to day. I wanna tell her that I love her a lot, but I gotta get a belly full of wine. Her Majesty's a pretty nice girl, someday I'm gonna make her mine. Oh yeah, someday I'm gonna make her mine.
see your passport, please?
Yes, I have it right here.
Yeah, look at this.
This photograph doesn't look a bit like you now, does it, sir?
Well, it's an old picture.
Precisely.
Is there anything wrong?
Oh, no. Would you mind waiting over there, sir? Oh, just leave your bags.
But my passport...
Next, please.
Information. May I help you, sir?
Yes, I'd like to know...
Not where... for 12 hours. You'll be informed at your hotel.
Yes,
Would
but...
you like to send a wire?
Well, yes, I guess I'd better.
One moment, please.
All right, sir. Do you want this to be a night letter, regular, or guaranteed delivery?
Which is fastest?
At this time of day, they all receive equal attention, depending, of course, on the zone involved. Which zone was that, sir?
I'm sending it overseas.
No, please, the zone. Look at the map.
Oh, well, then I suppose it would be...
I beg your pardon, sir, but is this your bar of soap?
I suppose it is.
So do we. All right, sir, your telegram has been sent. You'll be receiving it in about an hour. Guaranteed delivery. That'll be 275, sir, no tax.
Well, I haven't had a chance to change my money yet.
Just a moment, sir. Is this your bag?
No, it's not.
Check it again. Do take your time, sir.
This is definitely not my bag.
Just as we thought. Sign here, please. And here. And here. And here. And here. And here. And here. Thank you, sir.
We've sent your bags on ahead, sir. Where is it you're staying?
What's the best hotel in town?
Of course! Taxi! The taxis, they are all on strike. And it's too early for the bus. You really are a problem, sir. I suppose we'll have to put you up.
Going up!
You must be way out there, Pastor. Over.
I'm high, all right. But not on false drugs. I'm high on the real thing.
A pound of hash.
You fools!
What?
Haven't you found the contract yet? Your time is almost up.
Rococo, you slimy blackmailer. How did you get in here? You don't have a key?
No, only half a key.
What?
I had to split it with a sound effects man.
Creativity. It's a known fact that grass increases creativity from 8 to 11 times. In fact, everyone finds that they're more creative stoned than straight.
All of us are latent Michelangelos or Carusos or Da Vincis and think we can paint or sing or write. If only we tried hard enough.
Dog and she know it. I got about just a half of mine and she can blow it. Yeah, you take a trip to the left, you take a trip to the right. When you trip too far, you're gonna fall all night. Well, that's what you get standing by yourself doing the dirty dog on the continental shelf.
Do grabs until your muscles go.
Welcome back.
Back when you did say, for instance, don't crush that dwarf, were you guys, did you inhale?
Did we inhale?
I think we didn't exhale, I think.
You didn't exhale, that's good. That's good. That's the answer I sort of thought you'd say.
Hey, you guys, just at the age when you're looking for an interesting and exciting career in the military, get into the sky where they can't find you, higher than you've ever been before, behind the border, as a proud member of the Free Mexican Air Force.
Yes, skimming low out of border canyons and across below sea level salt flats, you'll be jockeying the big birds, B-25s, flying uncounted tons of contraband into these United States.
Yes, spreading Mexico's natural resources is a really fine job for any young man of military age. So take off with guys like me in the Free Mexican Air Force.
We had thought for years, astronomers had told us after looking to the great universe, that it was green.
Yeah.
I kind of like that green. Green's cool. The greens, right? It's
Man. Oh, green is really good.
There you go. Isn't it good?
Yeah. It's the best thing you get.
I'm a green man. I drive a hybrid vehicle now,
do you have one of those hybrid cars?
I have a gas car, man.
Gas and, methane or something.
Poop. Gas and poop. I drive a gas and poop car, man.
He does it himself.
Do you have to poop into it yourself?
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. It's like I recycle, you know. It's like good shit, man.
Okay. Peter, what were you saying?
Well, yeah, green's good, as you say, right? Yeah, you know, I can't use my poop hybrid car because I'm a meat eater and the smell is just awful.
Oh, you can eat vegetables, man. You can eat green.
You gotta go to Texas, man. In Texas, they
you
like
poop
that.
Easier, they like man. That, yeah, if you eat greens, yeah, you know, right. man.
So anyway, I thought the universe was green, and that was a good thing for me. It's been a hard time, and green is good. And I pick up the newspaper, and I discover that according to Dr. Carl Glazebrook and Dr. Ivan Baldry, the universe is beige.
Oh, wow.
Beige, man. Beige. I think that they were just, hey, these guys
glazed
were high.
And bald.
These guys were high, and they were looking at the reflection of their computer in the screen, because all computers are beige, man.
This is like some Lenny Bruce routine.
It really is, but it's true.
It's beige. No, it's like some
Lord Buckley.
Lord Buckley,
beige, man. The universe is beige.
That's sad, you know.
It's really sad. It's real sad.
Oh, the man says the universe is beige.
I mean, if I'm going to die and go out, since death is one of the leitmotifs of the show today, if I'm going to die and go out into the great universe, I don't mind being surrounded by the planets and the green, but to go out there and be somewhere fucking between Saturn and Neptune and my Uranus and find out I'm in the big beige, man, that bring me down.
Right.
I want to come back, man. I'll be a pig.
Whatever happened to like the black, you know, like the absence of all color, which used to be in our original language the word white. You know that, didn't you?
Yeah.
The word white meant both black and white because it was the absence of color.
But
so the universe could be both black and white at the same time, which is the way we've always thought of it. A lot of blinding white light and black nothing.
All what? Color is Squaresville,
okay.
isn't
the
it?
Over there
excuse
in the
me. Yeah, am I supposed to believe this?
No, these are just theories. These are theories. And in one universe, what we're saying is true. And in a parallel universe, what we're saying is hog shit.
Well, well, homeless. Another case has been solved by your brilliant... Homeless? Homeless lad, where are you?
I'm off with the moon, Doctor!
But why?
Because I'm going to solve the greatest case of my career, the mystery of the universe. Oh, sweet mystery of life, at last I found you.
Homeless had solved the mystery of the missing moon, only and loudly to embark on an even greater quest. I did not know if I would ever see my friend again, and I didn't much care.
Thank you.
This is Radio Free Oz. And now, we return you to Act 3 of the exciting conclusion of this week's mystery, The Poison Puff, with our guest super sleuth, Charlie Chance. In the lovely Victorian greenhouse of the late Dr. Anslinger, Charlie Chance has gathered together all of the possible suspects of this week's heinous crime. As his long, delicate fingers unhook the top frog of his richly embroidered Mandarin kimono due to the excessive humidity, we hear him say,
"You may all be wondering why I have gathered you together in the late doctor's lovely Victorian greenhouse at such a late hour. You see, just as I was drifting off to sleep, the elements of this heinous crime suddenly locked themselves together like the pieces of an ancient Chinese puzzle."
"I say, Mr. Chance, can't we get this damnable business over with so that we can all go back to our beds?"
"No one appreciates better than I the lateness of the hour. But you, Mr. Hawthorne Heathcliff, as the sole partner of the late Dr. Anslinger and the co-owner of his vast botanical patents, should be particularly interested in, shall I say, rooting out the culprit."
"I don't know what I'm doing here. I got enough on me hands keeping Mulch Manor clean."
"And who but you, Nurse Warren, as the lifelong companion and trusted confidant of the murdered man, would know better the hidden nooks and crannies of this ill-fated domicile."
"Right you are, Chance. I've never liked that woman, and I've always suspected that all she wanted was the doctor's money."
"Why, Mr. Mossbank?"
"Mr. Mossbank, you would do well to remember the old Chinese proverb, he who works in glass greenhouse should not get stoned. Is it not common knowledge that as the doctor's botanical assistant for 14 years, you were jealous of his position and honors and disappointed by your lack of achievement?"
"Oh, Harry, I know you didn't do it. Why, we were to be married in this very greenhouse."
"I sympathize with your concern for the doctor's assistant, Harry Mossbach, niece Wendy Simmons. But is it not true that just before the unfortunate doctor's life was snuffed out, he was in the process of rewriting his will that would have cut you off without a farthing had you married his assistant?"
"The doctor and I were discussing a more fitting match for the lovely Miss Wendy."
"Oh."
"Hawthorne Heathcliff, you bounder?"
"Gentlemen, gentlemen, let us review the facts. On the night of October 7th...
Eight.
Thank you, number one son. In this greenhouse, Dr. Anslinger was deeply absorbed in completing the final experiments on what was to be the most significant of his many botanical achievements. The first successful transplanting above the Tropic of Cancer of the virtually extinct herb Argentum Cannibal Vulgaris, or Glistening Javanese Bogfink, the one known cure for asthma."
"Oh, the poor man, he suffered from it all his life."
"He suffers no more.
Oh.
Because late last night, while the doctor was in a remote corner of the greenhouse watering his rare orchids organically, one of you snuck in here, crept over to the doctor's work table, opened the golden cigarette case in which the doctor kept his daily supply of Asmador cigarettes, his sole relief from the racking pains of asthma, and replaced the contents with cigarettes of their own making. They did not contain Asmador. Oh, no. But poison oak. The doctor returned to his work table, lit one of the counterfeit cigarettes, treated himself to a long, poisoned puff, hallucinated briefly, and died of the fantastic complications."
"Why, only a monster would do that."
"Yes, indeed. Only a monster." The doctor returned to his work table, lit one of the counterfeit cigarettes, treated himself to a long, poisoned puff, hallucinated briefly, and died of the fantastic complications."
"Why, only a monster would do that."
"Yes, indeed. Only a monster. And a very clever monster at that. And now, my friends, I am going to place the finger of justice on that monster."
Can Charlie Chan unravel the incredibly knotted web of this insidious, not to say heinous crime?
"I told you not to say that."
"With the only few meager clues at his command, As he steps forward, his long, delicate fingers unhooking the second frog of his richly embroidered Mandarin kimono, we hear him say,
Finger, unbeknownst to all of you, I visited your separate bedrooms this evening and extracted scrapings from beneath your fingernails. From beneath your fingernails, Mr. Hawthorne Heathcliff, I recovered these scrapings. They look remarkably like Asmodor, do they not?
No, they're nothing of the sort.
Exactly so. By quick chemical analysis, I've determined them to be a common oriental drug. You are not the murderer, Mr. Hawthorne Heathcliff, but you ought to be ashamed of yourself. Your fingernails yielded nothing, Nurse Warren.
Oh, I should think not. I ain't got no fingernails.
But I could not help but notice that your fingers were entirely covered with blisters, similar to those produced by poison oak.
Oh, that's from all the scrubbing of the pots and pans in Bloody Mulch Manor.
Of course. You have no need to fear accusation. What you need is a new detergent. But you, Harry Mossback, I hold in this envelope the scrapings from beneath your fingernails. They are, without a doubt, glistening Javanese bog think.
It's true. I snuck in last night and stole the doctor's prize specimen. I was tired of being an assistant all my life. And anyway, the bog think was mine. Yes, I stole it, but I wouldn't kill the old man. He was like a father to me. As a matter of fact, he was my father.
Then, Harry, that means we can never be married. Oh, it can't be true.
Oh, but it is true. Harry would never have killed his father. And you, Wendy, had nothing to gain. That leaves only...
What are you talking about, Chan? There are no suspects left.
None except Arthur, the butler.
I'm not even in the script. I'm just standing over here with my hands in my pockets watching the old thing unfold as it was.
With your hands in your pockets.
Yeah.
And that's where the elements in this heinous crime suddenly lock together like the pieces of an ancient Chinese puzzle. When I examined the golden cigarette case, I was puzzled by the complete lack of fingerprints. At first, I thought the murderer must have worn gloves, but this is not the season for gloves. And then it came to me. No fingerprints could only mean that the murderer had no hands. Take your hands out of your pockets, Mr. Arthur.
Now, wait a minute. I've got nothing to hide.
Precisely. You have nothing to hide, as everyone can see now, because you have no hands. Inspector Gridley, take him away. The mystery is solved.
And so, unhooking the final frog of his richly embroidered Mandarin kimono and smiling his inscrutable smile, Charlie Chance brings to a close another exciting episode of Who Done Did It. Be with us next week when our guest super sleuth, Sam Spade, tackles the case of the Maltese Chitlin.